G7, number 17B.
Okay, now I will, in a short way, just give an overall view of what at this moment, as far as I can see it in books, what at this moment natural science teaches us in regard to these questions of reality. I'm not an expert in natural science nor in physics and don't know practically anything about nuclear physics. So what I say you don't have to take as an expert, as something that is secure for all time, but what I am presenting is what I get from the newest literature on these questions. The newest literature naturally is written and stated in many books, but I rely mostly on the most recent book, namely on Paul Davies' book, The Mind of God, and especially on one book which I want to present because it's not in English and therefore you can't read it. But there are other people who don't know English that are also thinking. So I base myself mostly on a recent book that was for quite a while a bestseller, written by a French, it's only in French and in German, not in English, by a French philosopher. He is ranged as a Christian philosopher, as one of the best. He's quite old and has quite a good overall view of what philosophy has been teaching and what it's all about. And he gives in that book a discussion with an interviewer, or the other way around. He interviews as a philosopher two nuclear scientists. So they know about physics, about nuclear physics, about astronomical physics, and as a philosopher he tries to see somehow how philosophy can enter into the question that the physicists or the nuclear physicists are considering at the moment and what they have found out and how that fits into the Christian philosophy. So it is a book that is very interesting because it takes the same standpoint as we do, namely that we want to know what are the natural scientists thinking about their latest discoveries and try to interpret it in terms of divine metaphysics, in terms of divine philosophy, so to say, so that we have a wedding of those two. And when one reads that book, one can't help feeling constantly from the first page to the last page what Mrs. Eddy said in Revelation, the earth will help the woman. It's very definitely the main tone in it, though he doesn't quote that sentence naturally, but one could feel that what those nuclear physicists see today and what they can take as granted, as founded experiments and discoveries, how that can fit into our Christian philosophy or into our ontology, perhaps. The earth will help the woman. Yes. The spiritual idea, she said, will be understood. And as one goes through his way of thinking and through their discussion, one finds really many points where we see, yes, it is so, the spiritual idea will be understood. It's just a question of another, I don't know, I'm not a prophet, 20, 50, 100 years, until really here is divine science, and here is natural science, and natural science comes nearer and nearer and nearer and nearer and nearer to divine science. Not the other way around. It's not that here is divine science, here is natural science, but divine science gets nearer and nearer to the findings of natural science. It's really that natural science converges towards divine science. Now, I give you just a short overall view on the evolution or creation or Big Bang theory that is accepted today. Namely, I start out with the Big Bang. There was that Big Bang that is considered to be the starting point of the universe. From that point, about 15 billion years ago, it may be 18, it may be 20, that doesn't matter, it's long enough to have 15 billion years ago, there must have been a Big Bang. That Big Bang was enormous heat, let there be light. That's where it started. So what we were thinking perhaps 20, 30, 50 years ago, that the 7 days of creation had no connotation with the development and the evolution of the world, that it has nothing to do, we said, well, the big light, the sun, in the fourth day, came after the first day of let there be light, but light came from the earth, from the sun, we said, so that couldn't be the first day. That must be the starting with the fourth day, so it isn't correlating. But today it's different. Today the natural scientists say, yes, those days of creation are not so bad after all. It's really so that it started out with that terrific light. Let there be light, that Big Bang must have been a terrific light because of the explosion of the energy. It was what they call a gigantic explosion. All the matter of the cosmos could be reduced afterwards just to the head of a pin. They say it was an explosion that brought the whole universe into existence and still going on, it still expands. But there is so little matter involved in that explosion and in the present universe that if you take away the space in between the atom and the electrons and you take only the particles out of it, of the whole universe, a terrific big universe, if you take the distance between the particles away, you can put back that whole universe to the pin, to the head of a pin. So that's one thing. It shows that that big material universe is not so material as we think. It's something else. What is that something else? And we see that afterwards only also that head of a pin is reduced and reduced until it disappears. Can you see what they begin to find out? That matter disappears. We think it explodes and explodes and becomes bigger and bigger and bigger, the universe becomes bigger and bigger. Factually, matter disappears. And so they go on and say that with the Big Bang, something was created which we should call not so much matter or energy, but the concept of time and space on which we live. We have the time, space, the space-time universe. At that point, space and time was created. So that is actually much more important than all the material universe. But they say, naturally, they don't find the answer yet for everything. They have an open question. Could there be many other Big Bangs? Is our Big Bang the only one? Or is that just one phenomena of many, many equal phenomena? That's an open question. That's an open question. The open question is, can there exist many universes at a different stage of evolution? At a very different stage of evolution. If they are at a different stage of evolution, one stage cannot understand the other one. One stage has no knowledge of the other one. Is that reasonable? Well, if it could talk, say, to a worm, I could talk to him and say, you little worm, you go along your way. You know, you creep on and on and on. Do you have a three-dimensional universe? And he says, what do you say? What do you talk about? There is only two dimensions. I can only go forward or backward or sideward. There are only two dimensions. The worm doesn't have a three-dimensional universe. Yes? So, he cannot understand the three-dimensional universe. He doesn't know. He hasn't the consciousness of it. He wouldn't have the concept of it. And in the same way, we must see that there can have been many Big Bangs. That's a suggestion. We don't know by sure, but it's possible. And then we say, but I have no knowledge of it. And the answer is, you can't have a knowledge of it because you have a consciousness of just that one Big Bang that created space and time. That's your universe. And you can't understand another universe that has other dimensions. Just as the worm cannot understand the three-dimensional universe. So they can exist side by side. Many universes can exist side by side of which we have not the faintest idea, not the faintest concept. They go on and say, now, if the Big Bang started out the universe, what was before the Big Bang? Is the Big Bang the first cause? Where did the explosion come from? And again we ask back, what happened before the Big Bang? They don't know what that is. They call it the pea soup. Because they don't know what there was. Huh? The one physicist said, it's a total mystery, that pea soup. We don't know what existed that could bring forth a Big Bang. How that Big Bang has been brought forth. So before that Big Bang is a realm that is a mystery to us. It's an unimaginable reality. It's a reality which we cannot imagine because we don't have the frame of consciousness in order to understand it. It's what another one said, it is a timeless totality. A timeless totality. It's still a totality, but a timeless totality. A complete undividedness. A complete undividedness. Something was there, we have the faintest idea, we can't differentiate it, it's an undividedness that is complete, but we don't know what it is. If you ask your big physicist, John Wheeler, what he thinks about it, he says it is an infinite, that pea soup, huh, is an infinite sea of energy which looks like nothingness. Which looks like nothingness. It's a primeval form of energy of limitless power. They always feel it's power, 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 energy, energy, energy. But the other one, the forward thinker, come and say something quite different, quite astonishing. They said, that pea soup was an absolute symmetry. Can we figure out what they mean? We can't. And yet, Christian Science shows us the absolute symmetry as the cause of being. We haven't seen it because we were not aware to look for it. Though Mrs. Eddy at one place says it very definitely in miscellaneous writings where she speaks about man and what man is and asks questions about man. One question she asks, what is the form of man? And what on earth would we have answered, what is the form of man? Certainly not her answer. Her answer was, he is wholly symmetrical. We read that because we read Mrs. Eddy's books. Did we think and know what she meant? Man is wholly symmetrical. He is. The whole textbook shows us the absolute symmetry of being. I will come back to it at another point. Another one says that pea soup is a primeval principle. Can you see? That's one principle, a primeval principle. The principle without beginning or ending. He doesn't anymore ask, where did it begin, what was the first cause, where did it start, and what was the end. He could see, answers the same question, where does mathematics start? Who invented it? Who brought it forth? Where did 2 and 2 equal 4 start? It didn't start anywhere. It has no starting. I think that's one of the most difficult thing in our thinking, that we always ask for a cause. Always ask, where did it start? You know that. If something goes wrong in your life, if something goes wrong with our body and we have a sickness, the very first thing is, what is the cause of it? Isn't that so? We ask for the cause. We go back to the cause. But why should we go back to a cause if there is no cause? If in being there is no cause, what caused 2 and 2 4? Nothing caused 2 and 2 equal 4. It is a fact. It is isness. So, some of them who are thinking of these people, they go back to philosophy. That's a very interesting trend. Since about World War II, physicists began to become philosophers. They go back to philosophy because natural science doesn't give them an answer. So they go back to philosophy. Heisenberg went back right to philosophy. Weizsäcker again went right back to philosophy. Everybody of the big things is going to go right back to Plato and say, I read Plato. I even have first to know Greek, because only in the Greek you can understand Plato properly. Can you see how the philosophical aspect of natural science gains weight and gains weight and gains always more weight, until they come and see what St. John saw? Then John saw in the epistle of St. John, he said, right at the beginning, if there is a beginning, in the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God, and finally the Word was God. And that Word is the Logos. In the Greek it is the Logos. And so they say, in the beginning was the Logos. That's so to say what we can call the beginning or first cause. But the Logos naturally has no beginning. The Logos, they try to define very nicely and say, it is an intelligent, rational element that governs the cosmos, regulates, animates and operates it, so that there is no chaos, but just order. So if we go back to Logos, as that which had within itself order and law and all that is regulation and government and intelligence, then we have a so-called beginning. See how difficult it is for me to teach it, because in order to say that, what is the Logos? I had to say, well, we can take that as the beginning. Actually, it has no beginning. We take it as a beginning. The Logos itself has no beginning. So the language is always difficult to explain something correctly. For such an, it says, for such an intelligence as the Logos and deep order, no physical medium for carrying it is necessary anymore. So that Logos doesn't need a material carrier. I hope I translated it properly, a medium through which it is brought forth. We think, well, we need matter, we need energy, in order that the Big Bang expanded into the universe that we have now after 15 billion years. But the Logos doesn't need any material medium, perhaps I can say, a material transportation, to transport the intelligence to the universe. It doesn't need that anymore. It is the field of spirit. It is the field of spirit. So the physicist I quoted brings it right back to spirit, the whole cosmos. And you see what in this way we begin to understand those quotations we were reading together, which always said, we tread on forces, those forces are divine mind. All the power there is divine mind. All the cause and effect there is the divine mind. What holds the earth in its orbit? The divine mind. What is the principle that governs the universe? The divine mind. If I say mind or if I say spirit, it doesn't matter. Really, it's bringing it back to the synonymous term, to God. In this discussion that this philosopher had with those nuclear scientists, there were two of them, there is something interesting in it. Namely, the nuclear scientists say that mathematically they can calculate that in the universe there are no more and can be no more than 15 cosmological universal constants. You know what a constant is? Constant is the opposite of a variable. That remains constant. That doesn't change. We have in the universe, we have these constants, which are very exact. You have, for instance, the speed of life is a constant. Doesn't change. And you can calculate what the speed of light is, so and so many thousand miles. Or we have as a constant the absolute freezing point. That's a constant. We can calculate that, and it's at the so and so degree, it's the absolute freezing point. These are constants, and you know gravitation has a constant. And so there are many more constants which I cannot explain because I don't understand it. And they say they can be no more than 15 constants. The textbook only knows 15 constants, and no more, and no less. Is it numerology? Perhaps, but it's indicative, really, that they are of the same number. These constants are a wonder, are a terrific wonder, because when they calculate in mathematics what the constants are, they must calculate it, some of the constants, to the 62 decimal place? Yeah? Up to the 62 or 62nd decimal place. That which you have after the point. You have a number, and then after the point you have the fraction of it. 62 fraction must be exact, or the world falls into pieces. Can you see how exact that Big Bang was? That was not a chaotic happening. That's why they say there must have been behind it a terrific intelligence, that logos, that enormous intelligence, that had been so exact that those 15 constants, each one can be calculated, some up to the 62nd decimal place. They say that if that is not so, if only they vary a little bit, then the world would either explode or implode. It would either explode in all directions or would implode. That means going back to the Big Bang, to the origin. So can you see that this universe is something that has to do with a terrific intelligence, with a divine mind, with such exactness that we cannot even imagine it, how exact it is. One of the physicists gives a very good example how exact that is. He says, you know, it's so exact, as if you would be on a golf field here on Earth, and have one golf ball, and that you could hit that ball so that it would fall into the hole of the gold field on Mars. Think of the distance. With one shot, bang on, because all that way, thousands of miles, and falls right into the hole of Mars. So exact is built the whole world. Isn't it terrific? Or another one, Goose. I like Goose very much. Goose is an American nuclear physicist. He gives another example. He says, this is so exact as if you would have the edge of a knife and would put the point of a pencil on that edge of the knife and balance it for 15 billion years. So exact is the world. Yeah. We couldn't balance it for a second, not for a fraction of a second. Yes.